Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today is Wednesday, June
22nd. Good
morning. I'm here. You awake?
Yeah, good. It was hard to get out of bed this morning.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
I know. I kind of stayed up late, so it was hard to get up in the morning, and especially when you take an edible, you know,
yeah,
it's just like,
yeah,
it stays with you.
I had a similar situation.
You know, yeah. What's funny is my daughter had a friend make her a CBD thing,
okay,
just for anxiety, right?
Yeah.
But the thing was like 20 to 1 or something, or 200 to 1, I don't know, milligrams.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like to THC, you know. So,
sure.
So for every 20 milligrams of CBD, there's one THC. So I guess it added up. She ended up with like 30 milligrams or something of THC.
Oh, my God, how much CBD is she taking?
Well, I don't know. It was kind of like a big thing, you know. I don't know,
yeah.
But it ended up, there was some, no, actually, my son said it ended up being less than 10 milligrams of THC on there. So how do you get, like, so fucked up? But she did.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Sometimes
she,
it just
she didn't look for that. She just wanted CBD to relax, you know?
Yeah, I know.
So there you go. You know, it's the one thing where we try to treat ourselves like medication, but we don't know shit about it, you know?
I mean, we all know our own bodies. We know how they work.
Yeah,
you just
exactly.
Never know. I had a
yeah.
girl that was sick in my class, and she told me that eating fire hot Cheetos was the thing that helped her stomach.
Like, really, right?
Everyone's got their own remedies.
I know.
So,
it sucks,
you know?
Man. I know. At any rate, folks, we do have a guest in the studio once again. If you want to check us out, go to LA Talk Radio's page on Facebook. And we're there. Otherwise, you can stay here on audio, and we'll be joined by our guest in just a moment. Anything new that you want to report or anything?
Anything new, huh?
Yeah,
since
nothing
yesterday.
New, huh?
Yeah, I'm still partially employed, so that's good.
Oh, that's good.
That's
I'm glad
good.
To know that.
Yeah, that's good. No, I'm
partially.
Just, I'm just working on a film right now, and I, you know, sometimes the ideas like hit you like a ton of bricks, you know, and when they
right.
do, you go for it. So, I'm working on a whole situation with that, so that's felt really good to
yeah that's nice
to get that done, so
yeah
it's been on my mind.
Cool. You're talking, try to talk into the microphone.
Yeah, I don't
too.
Know why it's like,
yeah, turn it over a little bit.
Is that
yeah
one?
There you go.
Party foul.
Yeah, you can even pull that
cord.
I know,
the, it was
bit.
Tight.
I
didn't want to
yeah. There you go.
Yeah, that's kind of
yeah
that
I'll turn
helped.
Up your thing a little bit there
I
too.
Can always tell when someone sat here because this cord, I always organize it. It's a curly cord,
right.
I always organize it so there's no like messed up parts in it,
which I appreciate.
Yeah, of course.
But
and then every time
fuck
I sit
it up,
down
right?
I know, like I see two in that one and there's one over there.
I know people like to stick their fingers on it and
I don't have
and coil it around
anything.
Their fingers.
I know it just feels right though sometimes, you know.
You think
you're
so?
Like I just have to do this for
yeah.
some reason.
That's, I mean, the origin of these cords is from telephones. Did you know that?
Yeah, of course.
Like back when before
landlines.
I was even a kid. Yeah,
I know. We had a phone landlines. Like that in class last night.
Really?
Yeah, it was like a prop. I was like, that's cool.
Yeah, where did that come from,
I
right?
Know. And it also brought back memories of like hanging up the phone on people.
Uh-huh.
You can't hang up the phone the same way now.
Right.
You know, like you
not
just like
forcefully
press like a digital button, you know, like it's not like.
You can just slam it.
Yeah,
down,
you don't
right?
have to slam anymore. That's kind of, it's a bummer, you know?
Yeah, let's slam. We want to slam, folks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have to sometimes.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, what
slam
can you
a
do?
Phone, slam a door. We don't
yeah.
have any anger problems over here, though.
No, that's
nothing
a good
like
thing.
That.
Yeah, we're pretty relaxed here. We're pretty calm people here
yeah,
for the
totally.
Most part.
You've got your Stranger yeah. Things sweater on today.
Well, is that what it is?
It's
that's
your Stranger
right.
Things
Stranger
sweater.
Things, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't realize that, but I guess that's what it is.
No, it's a good
why
one.
Do they show those colors on the show?
Yeah, it's just very like 80s, early 90s. Like color scheme. Those,
okay.
those, how many is that? Three, four, five colors together?
Five colors, yeah.
Yeah. I never felt
yeah,
so
there's a little
that
color
like,
stripe here. And She's making a big deal out of it for the second time.
No, it's a great sweater.
Yeah, thank you.
You know?
I know, it's a little unusual, right?
Yeah. No, it's good.
I know. That's why I like it. It grabbed my eye in the store. So
there you go.
I got it. All right. Right before we get to our guest, I wanted to bring this up. I guess a woman passenger was assaulted while she was sleeping on a Spirit Airlines flight. So apparently what happened is she was sitting next to this guy, and she felt something touching her. And at first she thought, oh, he's just moving. You know, it was like, and then she like falls asleep, and she feels that the man's hand was inside the back of her pants. So she jumped and pushed the call button and told him, hey, you're going to stop touching me. Get off me. So, you know, so then nobody did anything. She wanted, the flight attendant offered her to move, but she didn't want to because she was sitting next to a friend, right? So she says, he touched my bare ass. He needs to be moved. And they ended up not moving anybody, you know?
So they just went the rest of the flight.
Yeah, can next you imagine sitting like that? Yeah.
No.
Good.
I would not continue sitting there.
How do people have the nerve to do that, you know?
But also, how are you going to complain and not have them move? Somebody's got to move.
Maybe they figured they can't prove it or anything, you know? I don't know.
They don't have, like, surveillance on airplanes?
Yeah, right.
You would think that they would.
But do you think they see his hand touching her ass? I mean, he could do it pretty...
You could probably see some kind of movement if someone's totally passed out on one end and another person's just like...
Well, they probably do that afterwards once she gets to the airport and stuff, you know, but...
creepy people out there, whatever, man. Just keep your hands to yourself.
Exactly. Get the hell off the plane, you know? Yeah. I mean, if you can't control yourself, don't be around people, you know? That's the bottom line.
I know. That's part of their lack of control.
Yeah.
What a mess.
Oh, well.
Well...
All right, well, we're going to bring on our guest right now.
Thank you
for sitting here patiently, Henrik.
Thank you very much.
We appreciate it. He's a young man, so excuse him if he's kind of restless, but he's not. He's actually sitting here pretty calmly, so that's cool. You're pretty young. I mean, how old are you?
I'm 25 years old.
Really?
I'm turning 26 in about 3 weeks.
Wow.
Happy early birthday.
Yeah, and you've done a lot of things already, and we can discuss that and everything. That's pretty cool. Henrik Fries, right? Say your full name for people that can actually that know you.
So my name is Henrik Fries de Magalhães Jimenez.
Okay.
But the last part of my name is very hard to pronounce for about 99.5% of the population. So.
Right.
So I just go by Henrik Fries.
Freeze.
Easier, probably.
Yeah, that's true. That's what I recommend. You know, make it easy for people to pronounce.
Yeah, exactly.
Otherwise, they don't remember shit. They butcher your name.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest is history, you know?
Totally. So, you want it to stick, you know?
Yeah.
Exactly.
And so you're from Denmark, right?
Well, I moved to Denmark when I was 3 years old.
You were born where?
I was born in Oslo in Norway. My dad's Norwegian and my mom's Portuguese.
Okay.
So,
You didn't go very far. Denmark is right there, Norway.
Yeah, Denmark is very close to Norway. Yeah, 6 hours from Oslo.
Scandinavia and everything.
Yeah.
So, you must be one of the happiest people in the world because that's what they say.
That's what they say.
Right?
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's very accurate, but that is what they say. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I know, because I wonder, because sometimes it's dark for very long up there, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But sometimes it's very light for a long time, too.
Yeah, in the summer, it's fantastic.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you feel that, I mean, do people get depressed there in the winter, do you think?
I think if you go to North Norway, they do in the winter. Yeah, it's completely dark.
Really completely dark.
Not even an hour of
really? Daylight. For how long? A few months?
For at least, 3, 4, 5 months, perhaps.
I wonder if a lot of people use those depression lamps there.
Probably.
You know?
Yeah. Seasonal affective disorder.
I knew a lot of people in New York that did.
Really?
Yeah, just because you're always surrounded by buildings. It's gray all the time.
Yeah.
I know.
Especially if you have a crappy view in your house. Then
most of us do, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Wow. And we're in Denmark, in Copenhagen?
Well, yeah. Now I live in Greece, actually, with my girlfriend.
Okay.
My company is based in Copenhagen, and I lived there also for 15 years. So
I see. Okay, so you grew up there? And
I grew up there for the most part, yeah. I lived in London for 4 years, studied there. I also lived in New York for a little bit.
Oh, wow.
Studied there as well. But
So is that where you learned your English? Because you speak very well.
Well, I grew up in international schools, American schools, British schools, so...
Oh, so it was easier for you.
Yeah, yeah.
You were exposed to it a lot.
It is my first, probably my best language, I would say.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So how did you end up in Greece?
Well, my girlfriend's Greek, and we're also planning on expanding our company to Athens, so we're going to open an office up there now.
Amazing.
So, I mean, the plan is to come to the U.S. in the next couple of years, and we're also opening an office here in L.A.,
right. Which came first, the office or the girlfriend?
The girlfriend came first.
So then he decides, yeah, I'll open one in Greece.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
It'll be close to her.
No biggie.
I had to compromise a little bit, so yeah. It's all right. Yeah.
That's okay. You like Greece.
Oh, it's fantastic. A bit similar to L.A., I would say.
Yeah.
Fantastic weather, amazing food, good people.
Yeah. Really I know cool. The food is good. My dad's from Greece.
Okay.
But he was only a year old when he came to Israel. So,
yeah.
But we ate a lot of Greek food, grew up on Greek music, and it was pretty cool.
We were actually just in Israel 2 weeks ago. Fantastic.
Oh.
Really, really nice. Yeah.
Yeah, I love it there.
How long were you there for?
Just for 3 days.
Yeah. Really?
But we went to Tel Aviv and then Jerusalem and the Dead Sea. Fantastic.
Wow, that's a lot to see in 3 days.
Yeah, no, it is a lot. But the Dead Sea is amazing.
Oh, incredible. When I went, we didn't get to go because we had a heat wave, so they wouldn't let us go to the Dead Sea.
Really?
So
really?
It was the one thing I missed.
Yeah.
So every time I hear it, I'm like,
yeah, well, maybe next time.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. Did you get to climb up to Masada at all?
No.
No time, right?
No, unfortunately.
Yeah. You know, now they have like a cable car you can get up there.
Mm.
But Masada is like a place where it's kind of, well, not really a fortress, but it's a mountain where it's flat on top and... There were Jews living there, and then the Romans got them all and things like that, you know. So it's like a bravery story, you know.
Yeah.
So heroic story. So so people go there, and it's pretty cool because there's a lot of remains and ancient things. And but when I was a kid, they didn't have the cable car, so you had to climb the mountain. You know, it was pretty cool, actually.
That is pretty
cool.
Yeah. How long does that take?
A while, you know, and it's really hot there in the summer too.
I know.
So I don't know why they made us do it, but they did.
Yeah.
So we
built character.
Yeah, I guess it does, right? So you just came back from there? Wasn't it like raining, like torrential rains?
It was crazy rain one of the days. But the people were so nice, and they actually invited us to their home and called a taxi for us. And such incredible people there, really.
Really?
I was so impressed.
So what were you doing there? Did you go for business?
Just there with my girlfriend, to travel right after New Year's.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Cool.
Oh, it was a great experience.
Where did you guys meet?
We actually know Delia, that's the name of my girlfriend, since I was 10, 11 years old. We met in school.
Wow.
We went to, she lived in Denmark back then, so we went to an international school in Copenhagen.
Uh-huh.
And I actually had a big crush on her. I would ask her for a number, and she wrote back like a small paper, gave me her email.
Uh-huh.
And then we would write a lot of emails to each other, and she had a small crush on me too, but never really worked out. But we always remained friends, and here we are today.
Oh, so you were friends. You kept in touch
and
stuff?
We kept in touch, and we've been together for 2 years now.
So how does it happen? What, one day you just tell her, look, I want more than just friendship? Take me out of the friend zone for crying out loud.
Totally.
I don't know how it happened. We stayed in touch. We would always say Merry Christmas and Happy Birthdays to each other, and then you just started talking more, and one thing led to another.
Well, congratulations. That's
Thank
a very
you.
Nice
Thank
story.
You very much. Yeah, it's
very inspiring story.
Lots of love on this show in the past
week. You know, you gotta really stay on it, you know,
for sure,
and go after what you want.
100%.
Yeah.
Wow, very cool. What was growing up in Denmark like for you?
Interesting. You see, Denmark is an interesting country because it's a very flat country. It's small. You can't go skiing, which is what I like to do because of Norway. That's what you do over there. You can't really go hunting, although you can do some minor hunting stuff there.
Right.
But culturally, it's a cool place. It's a very nice place for young people, for students, I would say, to go to a cafe, to go to restaurants. But if you're more like an adventure nature kind of guy, which I am, then I would
you
go
need
another
to go
place.
Somewhere else.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah. I've been to Denmark a couple times when I was very young.
Okay.
In fact, when I came out here to live in That was 1976. I stopped in Copenhagen again because we had been there the previous year with the family. And I thought, wow, you know, this is cool. Mm-hmm. And when we went there with the family, I was like 15 years old, you know.
Yeah.
But we went out there and we went out to Tivoli Garden, which was like a big theme park.
Yeah.
And
it's one of the oldest theme parks, actually.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really, really nice.
And but it was cool because we met these, like, you know, blonde, blue-eyed girls.
Yeah.
And we had beer. Like, we were 15 years old drinking beer, you know. Yeah. But everybody drinks beer there. So
oh, yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Those are the days.
But, and, yeah, and things change, you know. I mean, you know, people would, or women would lay out in the sun topless, you know, when it was a sunny day and everything in the park. And it's like you couldn't believe it, you know?
Yeah. So not American.
Yeah, you know?
Oh, yeah, it's very different.
And me as a kid, I'm like going crazy, you know, with that.
Yeah, it's quite crazy because I was just in Utah recently, and they're so strict on ID. And they were even IDing people that were 50 years old, 60 years old. I mean, why do they need to be ID'd?
Right.
I couldn't understand that.
It's crazy. They have to put it in the computer now or something.
Well, the rule is when you work in service to ID anyone who looks 35 and under.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, that's like kind of, I mean, both here at restaurants and in New York at restaurants and bars I've worked at and catering events, it's always been 35 and under.
So it's almost a compliment to be ID'd if you're like 40 or 50 then.
Yeah, totally.
That's good.
Totally. There you go,
It's always awkward when you walk up to a table and there's the woman that's obviously old enough to drink, and she's with like people who are like maybe 25 or 30. Mm-hmm. So you ID them and they just kind of look at you like, you want to see my ID? I'm like, yeah, absolutely. I'd love to see your ID. Thank you. Guess you are of age. Thanks. I had no idea.
That's crazy, man.
Yeah.
Wow. So do you have any siblings, brothers, sisters?
I have a big sister. Yeah.
Yeah.
Matilda, she's soon 30, I think, 29.
Yeah. Really? And where does she live?
She lives in Copenhagen.
In Copenhagen? Yeah, and your family's there too?
My parents are there. And then my cousins, my aunt, they're mostly in Portugal.
I see. So, oh, wow. So your mom's from Portugal.
Yeah.
Wow. So, so your parents met like...
They met on the train.
Yeah. On the train?
Yeah. It's crazy. That's a crazy story.
So much love in here.
Oh, yeah. That's a pretty crazy story. That would take probably 2 hours to tell that story.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Huh.
Well, we don't have 2 hours.
No,
but
we don't.
Do you have a short version of it?
Well, they met on the train twice in Portugal. My dad was like a backpacker and was traveling throughout. And
so they just happened to run into each other twice?
Yeah. Well, my dad asked my mom if he could sit next to her. She said yes. And they spoke a little English. And then they agreed to meet at some place. They didn't meet. And then 1 week later, they met again on a train. And my dad was a bit upset because my mom kind of canceled on him.
Uh-huh.
And then basically, yeah, the story goes from there.
Wow.
Yeah.
How cool. So there's hope, right?
There's always hope. You got to have faith.
There's hope for us, you know.
Sparkly love.
Yeah, because we're losing hope here.
We definitely are. But like, you know.
The months are going by and there's nothing going on, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to Hendrik Fries and... So tell us a little bit about what it is that you do, Hendrik.
Right. So I run a film production company. It's called HF Productions. And we run film festivals around the world. We have 25 film festivals, so there's quite a few. We also produce our own films and documentaries. I actually started out filming or making documentaries in Iraq, documenting the war against ISIS in 2015, 2016.
Wow.
So that's,
and he's so young, you know. I mean, when did you have time to do all that?
Well, I actually was kind of—I was leaving uni or college for a bit to do that.
Uh-huh.
So, but it was fine. I always made it work. I wouldn't leave for too long at a time.
Right.
So,
you weren't afraid to go there in the war zone?
A little bit afraid. But
so, what made you want to do that?
Well, I'm very passionate about politics and foreign policy in particular. And, you know, I would see some of these crazy videos that ISIS would do to people. And that just made my blood boil, really, to be honest. And I just wanted to raise some awareness, to document what's really going on over there, and to see what the international community is doing and if they could do more to, you know, stop ISIS, to help the people living in Iraq and in Syria.
Right. So did you travel to both countries?
Well, I was at the border of Syria, but I traveled to Iraq 3 times. So we were close to Mosul, we were in Sinjar, We were in Sinjar when it was occupied by ISIS, so we were literally just by the front line with the Kurdish forces over there.
Well, that takes a lot of courage to
Who
do
did
that.
You go there with, like, your basic crew?
Yeah, well, I went there 3 times. The first time was more of an observational trip, so I just went with one friend, and then the second time I went with 5 other people.
Great.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
And then we made a small documentary, and it actually premiered here in the Rally Studios here in LA.
Really? What's it called?
Cool. United We Win. Yeah, check it out.
United We Win. Wow. Yeah. So where can we see it?
It's online. It's on a platform called Documentary Storm.
So, oh, okay.
It's my first feature documentary. I'm not very happy with it right now. You know, there's a lot of things that could have been done better, especially technically. But I think the message of the documentary is what's important. And, you know, we interviewed a lot of people, a lot of soldiers, politicians, commanders, refugees, to hear their side of the story. What is the situation, you know, and they were all asking for help. They wanted help from the international community. They wanted help from the United States to be more involved,
right?
To you know, train their troops, send more soldiers, give them weapons, give them financial means to combat ISIS, of course.
Right. And the biggest victims are the civilians, of course, right?
They are always the biggest victims in war. Yeah.
And there's horror stories, right? I mean, it's terrible the things that they've done.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it is just to really intimidate people, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Fear is one of their biggest weapons for ISIS, for sure.
Yeah, of course.
But they do the things that, you know, people are scared about. There's some horrific stories out there.
Yeah. Did you actually talk to people, civilians and things like that?
Oh, yeah.
Interview them and stuff?
I interviewed several. I interviewed a teacher from Mosul. Actually from Sinjar. Sinjar was overrun and completely occupied by ISIS.
Right.
And I think that was on August 4th, 2014. And they were leaving as they heard that ISIS were coming. And his brother and his dad went back to get their IDs, and he never saw them again.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. So, and all the men were killed. They were taken to a spot and executed, and all the women, Yazidi women, were sold as sex slaves.
Right, and raped. And the kids are trained to be fighters
to
too,
be
right?
Fighters, yeah.
Wow, can you imagine?
Like little kids with guns and stuff like that. It's like nothing.
They
over
start
there.
Training them at 6 years old.
Yeah.
So,
and devastating entire populations, you know, and it's unbelievable, you know.
It's crazy.
How were you able to communicate? Did you have an interpreter there?
Yeah, we had a fixer, security, interpreter, driver, we had everything.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, you have to, because you have to get permission to pass the checkpoints and to be able to be at the front lines.
Right.
So we had to have, you know.
And ISIS let you get, did they let you get close to them?
I mean, we were actually attacked in one day we were there in Sinjar. There were some mortars sent at our position, so we had to move to other positions, and then more mortars were sent really close to us.
So they didn't really let you document anything
Well, that was good documentation in itself. That was in October 2015 when ISIS still had Mount Sinjar.
Right. But you didn't interview any of them or anything?
Of ISIS, no. They would kill
They kill would
us.
Kill you, yeah. Right? Yeah. They're not open to that.
No. Yeah, they're not there's really
actually,
open-minded.
I think there's one German journalist that has been able to go into ISIS and interview them, and he wasn't killed or anything.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
But yeah, there's not that many
that's
that have.
Unusual.
I wonder
what
that deal is.
Yeah, right?
There's got to be.
What's going on
that's
there?
It's not just like, this guy's actually kind of cool. Like,
well, maybe they felt he was going to tell their story where it makes them look good or something.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's possible, but, you know.
Do they really want to look good?
I don't know.
I mean, they know what they're doing.
They want to look scary, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
It's pretty crazy, yeah.
Yeah. How long were you there? You said a few days?
Yeah, well, so I did 3 trips. Each trip was about 10 days or so. So,
wow,
but it was very, very intense, though.
So this is a full feature film?
It's a 40-minute, so at some festivals it's considered a feature. At others, it's short, so it's not a great length, but yeah, it's in between those.
Right. What other films have you made?
Well, we've been executive producing some other stuff. I mean, I did other shorts in Iraq as well. I also documented the refugee crisis in Greece and stuff like that. Now we are mainly EPing and helping other films on the festival circuit. So right now we have co-executive produced Women of the Gulag, which was actually shortlisted at the Oscars last year.
Very nice.
Very interesting documentary.
Yeah.
So there's a few things down in the pipeline that we're looking at. So
It's
going to be an interesting year for sure.
So you guys produce actual festivals,
right?
For films.
Yes.
How did you get into that?
Actually, well, my own documentary, United We Win, was at several film festivals around the world, and I went to several of them, saw how the process worked, and thought that there's a lot festivals can do to promote independent filmmakers and up-and-comers. So I saw there was sort of a gap in the market, and started with a festival in London, and then it basically grew from there. I mean, I've always been very entrepreneurial-minded. I like business as well. So I made it into a company, and we also focus on social impact causes, and for example, our Arctic Film Festival, which is the northernmost festival in the world, in Svalbard, awesome festival. Mm-hmm. That focuses on sustainability, on climate change, and we work with the United Nations actually on that festival as well, with the UN SDGs.
I see. So that's for like documentaries and things like that.
Yeah, but most of our festivals are for short films. We have some that are very general for features as well.
Right.
So we accept mostly all kinds of films. Some festivals are more specific, have specific genres, but
The short films really need it because they don't get wide releases.
They don't. It's very hard to get short films in cinemas, right?
Yeah. So,
but one thing that we see with our festivals is we almost get full house every single time.
Really?
There is a real interest for people.
And there's a market for it.
There is definitely a market.
Yeah.
100%.
How old were you when you did your first film?
Well, it was 2016, I think it released. So I got a 22, 23, 21.
That's 21, pretty cool. Yeah. When you were younger, did you make films on your phone like that?
No, I never studied film. I'm not a film person. It actually came from my political, inspiration rather. But I do believe film is the best way to spread messages across and inspire other people, for sure. You know, film is a fantastic medium to do those kind of things.
Yeah.
So I used that as a medium to document what was going on in Iraq.
Right.
And amazing.
So now, did you have to get funding for the company and everything too? Because I would imagine it's a big deal.
Right. Well, for the film, I spent my own money on that.
The festivals.
It's a bootstrap company, so we actually we don't have any loans or anything like that. We operate purely from our profit.
No investors or anything.
No investors.
Wow, good for you.
Yeah.
That way, you don't have partners that you don't like. You know.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah,
totally.
Yeah. No, it's great. No commitment. You know, we can do what we want, our vision. So in that sense, it's great. But it's very possible that we will be looking at investors in the future.
Yeah, if you want to get real big, then you have to.
For sure.
You
know, yeah. We have some big plans down the road. So.
Right. So what are some of the countries where the festivals are?
We have 6 here in the U.S.
Uh-huh.
And we have in Greece. We have in Athens and Santorini. A very nice festival, an open air cinema in Santorini.
Oh, nice.
And we have in Norway, I mentioned Arctic Film Festival, which is up in Svalbard. That's probably my favorite festival because it is in such a remote location. I mean, there's only 2,000 people that live up
really?
There. It's incredible.
Wow.
And so we have an office in Jakarta in Indonesia. So we're planning to expand to Asia now. We have a couple of festivals in Australia, which is a really great market for short films as well.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, pretty much all over Europe, and we're trying now to reach Asia, Australia, and the U.S.
Wow. Well, I mean, obviously you're growing and everything.
Absolutely,
you know.
Yeah.
You're going to be very rich, you think?
We'll see. Money is not important.
Probably already is. He's just not telling us.
No.
As long as you're following your passion.
Sure, yeah. That's what you have to do. Mm. I mean, we only live once, so you have to do what you want to do, or else what's the point of really living?
Yeah, so totally.
That's true. What are some of the other films? What are some of the topics you focus on?
Personally or
with the films, let's say.
I mean, if I'm going to do a film, it's going to be something that I'm really passionate about. So it's going to be related to politics probably or to humanitarian catastrophes, something that if I'm going to be very involved with it. But I have executive produced other films that have nothing to do with politics. For example, there's Funny Tweets out there, which is a comedy that features Andy Richter and a few other people.
Uh-huh.
That has nothing to do with politics.
Right.
And that's just a light, funny documentary. But if I'm going to produce something or direct something myself, then it's going to be something that has a special place in my heart.
Right.
Something that I'm very passionate about.
So far you've done documentaries. You haven't done any fictional stuff.
No, I'm not really into that.
I love to watch it,
but not.
So that's not the direction you're taking.
Not personally, no.
Right. But obviously the festivals you're going to have
those. Of course. Yeah. We get some incredible films that are all kinds of genres.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, we get a lot of short filmmakers here because we have publicists that represents them,
right.
And so we always find out about how they're marketed and distributed and stuff, you know. So I understand now there's like more resources to watch short like on the streaming.
Yeah, actually. So people can access it more. You know, if there's more accessibility in the market, then they're, you know, short films will have a better chance to be successful, really. Because many people make short films to begin with, but they don't really get anywhere with short films.
Yeah.
Because no one sees them. There's right, no place
exactly.
where you can see them.
Right.
So
they serve more as like reels for the makers of it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like,
yeah.
This is what I could make. Now right. now invest in me
exactly.
for a full feature.
That's exactly what people do.
Yeah.
Filmmakers, yeah.
But there's a lot of great stories out there, you know? I mean, a
absolutely.
Lot of talented stuff. So so what you doing is cool, you know? Now, in this country, you said you have about six of them? Six festivals?
Yeah, we have
here?
Six festivals here. We have one in L.A., which is going to be in March this year.
Uh-huh.
Then we have in Oakland and San Francisco, also going to be in March. And then in June, we have in Dallas, we have in Phoenix, and in Albuquerque.
Wow.
I'd love to check out the one in L.A.
Yeah, yeah. Check it out. It's going to be in the L.A. Downtown Independent Cinema.
Amazing.
So, yeah, check it out.
I live downtown. That's perfect.
What's it going to be called?
It's called L.A. Festival of Cinema.
So, oh, okay. So, we'll look for it.
Yeah. Awesome. We would love to have you guys come there.
It'll be absolutely.
Great fun.
Yeah.
I'll be there.
How many films are they going to have there? Do you know?
We're probably going to screen somewhere around 20 to 30.
20 to 30
yeah,
films.
Short films, probably.
The short films,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So it's not that many. And they're from all over the world, too, right?
All over the world.
There's a lot of European filmmakers that make short films.
I mean, at our festivals, we have people, filmmakers come from all over the world.
Yeah.
So it's great for networking as well and for them to meet other people in the industry. It's really great fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds good, man. So you have your own production company. You you sort of like you take on other productions of other filmmakers as well.
Sometimes, or is it just sometimes we help them. For example, we'll partner with them.
Right.
We might help you know with some strategies on the festival circuit. So then we won't include our festivals, of course, because that's kind of a conflict of interest.
Right.
So if we help them on the festival circuit, then we have partnerships with other festivals. We try to see, you know, what kind of festival suits their films. Is it a comedy? You know, is it a horror film? What kind of film is it? And then we try to find the right direction for them and do some consulting.
Right.
So
I would imagine you travel a lot, huh?
Oh yeah, and this year is going to be crazy. I'm going to Australia and New Zealand 2 weeks after here. Yeah.
Really?
So
oh my gosh, on the move.
Yeah, there's a lot of traveling. It's great because you meet other people, you get introduced to other cultures, and you learn a hell of a lot. But I mean,
right.
It's also a bit tiring. And you know, I miss my girlfriend a little bit, and she's not too happy with me traveling all the time. So
really,
does she ever travel with you?
Sometimes, but she works in Athens, so she's not as flexible.
Well, she better get used to it, you know? I mean, this is
she
you,
does,
you
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
She's got to take you with everything, you know?
She does, yeah.
The good and the bad, you
this
know?
This is the package.
Yeah. Right. Hey, you guys planning a wedding soon, or how's that looking?
not right now.
Not
you
right
always
now.
Peg people with it. You're always like, so a wedding?
Yeah,
a wedding?
Well, you know, I mean, they sound like they were destined to be with each other, you know?
Yeah, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. Very cool. What does she do?
She works for an advertising company in Greece called, it was called J. Walter Thompson. Now it's Wunderman Thompson.
Oh,
so
wow.
It's a really good ad agency in Athens.
Cool.
Yeah. J. Walter, it sounds pretty familiar. Is that an American company?
Yeah, it is. And it's all over America as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So they just merged with Wunderman. So now it's just Wunderman Thompson.
Oh, okay.
Or just Wunderman. Yeah.
Yeah, I used to follow the advertising industry.
Mm-hmm.
But so I used to know all the companies and stuff, but not anymore. I wanted to ask you now, when you put a festival together, what's involved? I mean, it sounds like a lot of work, right?
Yeah, it is a lot of work. It takes a lot of...
Do you do it all yourself, or do you have...
We do everything ourselves. We don't outsource anything. So we have a big team in Copenhagen. We're almost 10 people there.
And, I see, okay.
And we are 6 people in Jakarta. And now we're going to open an office in Athens to focus more on our events in Greece. So it takes a lot of planning, coordination. You've got to contact a lot of partners, sponsorship,
Yeah.
It's a lot of planning involved.
I can't imagine. Now, do you hire locals at the places where you open?
We work, we work with locals in many of our events as well, and also interns and volunteers as well.
Wow. So how did you get all the way to Jakarta, man?
Well, we wanted to spread into Asia.
Right.
So we needed another base there, really. Otherwise, it would be too expensive to have all of our staff and employees travel from Copenhagen to Asian events.
That's true.
As well. So it was between Singapore and Indonesia, and we checked both of those places out. But Jakarta was a bit more affordable, and it's very strategically located as well, close to Australia, close to everywhere else, pretty much.
That's true.
So it's wonderful. It's a great country.
Are you trying to break into China and things like that too?
You know, China is a bit more difficult because they have a lot of censorship laws and regulation over there.
So you can't bring just any movie you want there.
No, you can't. It's a bit tough. So I'm not sure about China. We're gonna have to wait with that market.
Yeah, people don't understand that. You know, they think, oh, China is like modern now and everything, but they still got all these old things there going on, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's a heavily regulated country and surveillance everywhere.
I know. My brother lives there and he's like, no, it's not a big deal. I'm like, what do you mean it's not a big deal, you know? Yeah. I mean, I want to have my Google and my Facebook, you know?
No, exactly.
And you can't have it there, you know?
That's crazy.
I know. I guess it all depends what you're used to on your day-to-day basis.
Yeah, you know? And what you're willing to give up, I guess, you know?
100%,
And some people, you know, he's like, well, what freedom do you need? I'm like, you know, I just don't want surveillance on me all the time.
I know.
You know, that's good enough.
It is in a way, but...
And it's probably unpredictable. You don't know what they're going to do to you and all this shit. People disappear there all the time. You know?
Yeah. There's not a fan.
A lot of things going on with Muslims in China.
They're
being sent to concentration camps and work labor camps.
Wow,
over there.
Really?
Yeah, it's not really good.
And no one's talking about
They're shutting down everyone who's talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
So
I know it's a really big deal. It's been going on for like, over a year now?
Oh, yeah. Oh, probably longer. I mean, we've only heard about it for the past year or two.
Exactly. So. I only saw a video about it on YouTube about a year ago.
Yeah.
So, and I've heard maybe one or two other things about it since then.
Really?
Maybe. Yeah.
Wow. There's like a disease spreading in China now, and they're afraid it's going to come here. And
I read something about that. Yeah.
What kind of disease?
Something with the virus. I can't remember the name of it, but it's probably here somewhere. But something like the SARS. Remember they had SARS in Asia, and they were bringing it here, and people were concerned and everything. So I don't know what... coronavirus... it's reached the U.S. Here's how to protect yourself. It's a deadly new coronavirus is what they call it.
I always picture the movie Outbreak.
Yeah, right.
I always think of that since I was a kid. Every time I hear about viruses and stuff, I'm like, oh, my God. Mm-hmm. It's all happening now.
Yeah, I know. Do you go to London sometimes?
Yeah. I mean, I lived there for 4 years. And
True. Did London. You go to school there?
Is
that
where I did.
You went?
An American college, actually. Goes
oh, Richmond. Really?
Yeah.
What did you major in back then?
International relations.
So oh, I see.
Politics.
Yeah, you're into politics and things like that. That's pretty cool.
I'd like to get involved in politics in the future. Maybe in the U.S. We'll see what happens.
Really here?
Yeah, I'd like to, yeah.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Break a leg.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. It's tough. So the politics here interest you?
Well... Current state of affairs is a bit all over the place. I was interested before all this stuff happened, but it still interests me. I mean,
yeah.
If you want to become an actor, I think you want to go to Hollywood because it's the biggest place to do it. And for me, the same thing goes with politics. If you want to be a politician, I want to do it in the U.S. because, I mean, to me, U.S. is the greatest country in the world, and it promotes democracy. And, you know... We have to protect that, I think.
Right.
So
absolutely, I have to agree with that.
Too
many haters, man. Too many haters.
A lot of haters out there, for sure.
You know, because we represent the Western world. You know,
exactly.
I mean, we represent something that's opposing a lot of other cultures. You know,
right.
And that's why they hate us so much. You know, but at the same time, the U.S. has always been there to save the day. You know, two world wars, and you know. You can't deny the importance of the U.S., you know?
And it's funny, because when I was in Iraq, they were all telling me that we want American troops here.
Right.
Send American troops, help us defeat ISIS. And you don't really see this on the news. There's a, maybe a little different narrative there. But this was written on the walls. We want international forces. And when we were documenting all these people and all the soldiers pleading. They were literally begging for help. So it's very interesting. But America has always been to the rescue, World War II especially. And it's important to remember that, important to remember history. And, and you know, we're helping people in the end of the day, right? That's what we want to do. If America was in a similar situation, I'm sure the American people would want to have help from overseas, from our friends and allies, right?
Right.
So it's important to remember that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, sometimes people say we can't be the policemen of the world or something, but there's got to be policemen, you know?
And what's the alternative? I mean, the alternative is Iran or Russia or China. And,
exactly.
And neither that's of those countries believe in democracy.
Right. Yeah, they definitely can't be the policemen, you know?
Right. No, exactly.
They're going to destroy everything they touch, you know?
Yeah.
So, I get that, you know? All for American exceptionalism and the leadership, you know? I mean... Yeah. And but yeah, as you can tell, we have a lot of bullshit going on these days.
A lot of
days.
Division. It's a shame. It's really a shame.
Really?
Because there's so much potential in the U.S.
I agree with you on that. You know, yeah.
It's a shame.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a whole
but
other
it's
show.
Interesting. Yeah, but it's interesting. You're interested in that because you're not. Yeah. You know, you weren't born here.
I'm not American yet, but we'll see. So.
But the plan is there, right?
Well, yeah, we have some ambitions and goals down the line.
That's good, good. You'll probably have to situate yourself in Washington, D.C. or something.
Yeah,
right?
Or close to, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So you
right
can
in
be
the heart of it.
Part of the whole thing, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. You can't help it. When you live there, you become part of it, you know?
I never lived there.
Yeah.
Have you been there?
I've been there, yeah.
It's really cool place.
When you grow up on the East Coast, you go to Washington, D.C. for like every field trip.
Yeah.
Really?
So, yeah. They were it's yay, really Washington,
cool
D.C.
It actually reminds me a lot of Europe, I would say, D.C. And New York, too, of course. And then there's Boston. It's very, like, Europeanized, I would say.
Yeah, yeah. What other places in Europe have you been to?
I've been to 60 countries.
Really?
So I've been to pretty much
everywhere. This kid is 25 years old. I mean, when did you have time to do all that?
Well, my job is traveling, pretty much. So I travel a lot.
That's
and then
true.
I travel when I can in my free time as well.
So you've just packed it into the minimal amount of years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the short films I did, I had to travel through many countries in Europe because I wanted to document the refugee crisis. So I just got to see a lot of countries.
Right.
Yeah.
What do you think about that? There's no easy solution to that, right? I mean, what do you do? On the one hand, you want to help them out. You want to take them in. But then on the other hand, it's like, at what point do you say enough is enough, you know? How many can we take?
It's a huge problem that many countries are facing. And how do you solve it? I think you have to solve it by the root problem. You have to, you know, take the snake by its head. And the root problem is ISIS. This is why are we having refugees? Why is it happening in the first place? Because they're fleeing from their homes. Why are they fleeing from their homes? Because we're letting ISIS expand, or in the past, now they're virtually defeated in Iraq at least, but we let them expand. We let them take over and occupy all these towns, homes, cities. They had Mosul, which is the second largest city of Iraq, 2 million people.
Right.
Think about that, 2 million people living in a city. ISIS had that city.
Right. We were controlling it.
Controlling it completely and had all the people that were living there. So that's why we have refugees.
Yeah.
Now, if you're not willing to solve that problem, then we're going to have to solve the refugee problem. And there were 12 million refugees.
Wow.
So it's just so complicated.
Right.
So complicated.
Yeah. So, but ISIS still exists.
It still exists. It doesn't control any cities or towns in Iraq anymore.
Right.
There's a lot of fighting going on in Syria. So they have been very much depleted in the past couple of years, ISIS. Their leader, Baghdadi, was killed a few months ago.
Mm-hmm.
So their organization is very much limited now. But there's a lot of sleeper cells around Iraq, around Syria, around Europe, and around the U.S. too.
Right.
So it's very important that the international community remains on the offensive, you know, keeps targeting the terrorist leaders, their networks, their financials.
right,
to hinder their capacity. Yeah. 100%.
It's amazing that they would go and terrorize their own people. You know, I mean, it's not like they're bringing an army to Europe or something, or to the United States.
I mean, that's a control thing,
right?
For sure.
You know, and that's about it. They're trying to scare people into being involved in all this shit, and then you know, they want to take over.
It's
I don't
crazy.
Know how they plan on doing that, but
yeah, it's interesting because when we were in Sinjar, we went to the tunnel networks that they would create to, you know, safe to protect themselves from the airstrikes.
Right.
So there was huge tunnel networks.
Right.
And we went to one of these tunnel networks in Sinjar after it was liberated, just a few days after ISIS had left, and we saw, you know, cooking materials, but we saw, most importantly, lots of hadiths. And they had lots of Qurans and different hadiths, which basically, like Salafi and Wahhabi texts, to justify their actions.
Right.
Right. So it's very interesting. It's interesting to see,
like, to bastardize the Quran and things like
course.
That. Right.
100%.
To interpret it in the way that would back what they're thinking. You know.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right.
To back their ideology.
Right.
So there's definitely an ideological problem to this as well that needs to be confronted.
Right.
Not really by us, but by the Muslim people.
Right.
Because most Muslims don't believe in Wahhabism or Salafism, which is the extreme Hanbali thought of Islam. And that's what needs to be confronted.
Yeah.
You know.
So there's a lot of misunderstanding also of Muslims around the world.
Yeah,
and
there is.
Things like that, right?
For sure.
Yeah. Wow. Well, good for you. You know, I mean, you've definitely got like a full life. You can't claim to be bored. You know, you're doing a lot of things. And so tell people where they can find you, where they can follow you, and everything.
Sure. Well, they can look us up on hfproductions.net, hf-productions.net. That's our website. All our festivals are listed up there. And you can also find us on our partnering submission platform, Film Freeway. All of our festivals are listed on there. So, yeah, that's pretty much it. My name is Henrik Fries, and you can look me up, too, if you want. And
there you go, F-R-I-I-S. That's how you look it up. And the rest of his last name is not that important if you can't pronounce it, but it's important to you.
It is.
So say it again.
The Magliani Jimenez.
The Magliani Jimenez. Okay. I said it before.
Close.
I said it before, but I need to focus on that. I know, I better not attempt it, right?
You're not alone, don't worry.
Right. But that is that a Norwegian name?
So that last name is my mom's name, actually. It's Portuguese.
Oh, so it's Portuguese.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Very cool. So you have your dad's and your...
I have my dad's as my middle name, which is not common, right. And my mom's surname as my last name. Because that's the name I want to bring forward to my children.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay, well, maybe make it more pronounceable or something.
Yeah, it is already translated actually in English. It's Magellan.
Magellan, that's
so
good.
It's a bit easier.
Yeah, that's easier.
That's quite easier.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Hendrik, thank you so much for joining
Thanks
us.
For
it's been a great pleasure.
Show.
Thank you.
You're a bunch of information, a lot of fun, and very interesting. And we really appreciate you coming in. Where are you going from here? From LA?
I have some meetings now. I'm going to go to Culver City, and then I'll be traveling home after a couple of days.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
so
cool.
Keep doing what you're doing.
Thank
yeah.
you, for
yeah,
sure.
Totally.
Send our love to your girlfriend also. I'm sure we'll she's do. Beautiful and nice.
She is.
And come back and visit us sometime.
For sure. I'd love to.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Safe
All right,
travels.
Everybody. Thanks for listening.
We'll see you tomorrow.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen, only on LA Talk Radio.